And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Nerdy Notions, your most nerdtastic place for all your nerdy things. Did I say the word nerdy enough? Probably not.
I think you need to say it 30 more times.
Nerdy. Anyway, today we are talking about Iron Man 2, which is not only the first sequel of the MCU, but it is also arguably the first really MCU establishing film. Yep. And there's a lot of reasons for this. The first being that unlike Iron Man and the Hulk, which relatively aside from after credit scenes or end scenes, relatively stand on their own and don't do a lot of world building, Iron Man 2 is the first film in the MCU that leads us into Thor and leads us into Captain America more blatantly. This movie also got some flack. It also faced some issues, and we'll talk about those as we get going. So with that in mind, let us start with Iron Man 2. And we open on a cold winter's day in Russia because nobody, apparently there is no other parts of Russia to film except Siberia, where we see an older gentleman watching the news, and we see him, what he's watching is actually the press conference from Iron Man 1 directly at the end of the movie where he announces, "I am Iron Man." Meanwhile, this man looks like very sickly, and we flash to our villain, played by Mickey Rourke, who is he's a combination of two different characters from the comics, which is Whiplash and Crimson Dynamo. Both of whom are excellent Iron Man villains, but I guess because Crimson Dynamo also has a high-tech suit, they didn't want to go that route again, given that the villain from the first movie was also a suited person, Obadiah Stane. And we know from Iron Man 1 that Obadiah Stane was supposed to be a larger arc villain, where John Favreau originally had, or whoever it was at Marvel, I think it was Favreau, had this idea of a trilogy, where throughout the course of the first two films, Obadiah Stane would become the villain. And then there was talk about, but when that happened for Iron Man 1, they decided that they needed a different villain. They threw around the Mandarin, but apparently that was too mystical or something. Even though there are a lot of subtle hints throughout this movie about the Mandarin that never came to fruition. It's very sad. Anyway, so Mickey Rourke plays Ivan Vanko, the son of this other guy named Vanko. Anton Vanko, who used to work for Tony Stark, as we'll find out later in the movie. But I have a bone.
Not for Tony Stark, for Howard Stark.
Oh, did I say for Tony? Yes, for Howard Stark. Yep. But I have a bone to pick with this movie. It's a big one. Who told Mickey Rourke that he could speak Russian?
Welcome to Acting 101.
No. There is a plethora of actors in Hollywood who speak Russian.
Thing about Mickey Rourke, though. He was just coming off of The Wrestler.
I don't care.
So his stock was really high at that time.
I still don't care. And this is the other part. The guy who plays Anton Vanko, his name is, where is it? I just had it. Yevgeny Lazarev. He's a Russian actor. He's actually a Belarusian actor who was born in the USSR in 1937. So no one told him how to freaking enunciate. It would have taken 2 seconds. 2 seconds! Okay, so Mickey Rourke is a very interesting interpretation of this character. He's very stereotypical Russian, who's like been to prison and all that jazz. And there's a scene where Anton dies, and I don't know, I guess it was manlier to just scream into the ceiling, but it's cringy. I'm sorry. It's really cringy.
That was at the very beginning when Anton died.
Yeah. So we see a lot of hints about how Anton has some kind of tie to Stark Industries because there's like blueprints and shit. And okay, so we've established, we've introduced this villain dude. And so we then flash to the start. We have like a really nice intro as Anton is, or excuse me, Ivan is building his Whiplash suit. And then we flash to the Stark Expo where Tony Stark is being Tony Stark. And he is introducing the Stark Expo, which weirdly enough, the first expo actually happens in Captain America, which we will be talking about in a few weeks. And, you know, Michael, feel free to jump in because I will just keep ranting as I do.
I'll just chime in when I need to get you back on track.
Fair.
Because apparently going to Philadelphia might have gotten me sick. So I'm downing cranberry juice and water with my microphone muted.
So we are enjoying the Stark Expo. Tony is being very flashy and introducing his, I don't know, he's very excited about his Iron Man suit and how he's basically, he uses the, and I quote, he has successfully privatized world peace, unquote. So it's, we go through the motions. He's like shaking hands with everybody. He's so great, blah, 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 blah. And then he gets served. He has to appear in front of some kind of Senate subcommittee. And the point of the subcommittee is to talk about the Iron Man suit, the Iron Man weapon. So as we keep going, Tony is being his usual snarky Tony self. He is not really taking this seriously, and Pepper's just like, you need to turn around and like be a big boy now. And all of a sudden, Rhodey walks in. And Rhodey is, of course, as we mentioned in the Iron Man, in Iron Man 1 podcast.
Well, actually, before you get to Rhodey, you had Sam Rockwell's character come in.
Is that before or after Rhodey?
That's before Rhodey. Before, because what they did is they're like, we want to bring in our weapons. We want to bring in our weapons expert. And Tony is like, I just want to know that I acknowledge whatever. I forget the name of the character, but I don't see any.
Hammer.
Yeah, I recognize Mr. Hammer entering the room, but I'm still waiting to see an actual expert come in.
Yep. So, Justin Hammer. Is basically the new weapons expert, and he's kind of incompetent. This is clearly a man who's been second best to Tony Stark his entire life, which actually explains the relationship between like Anton and Howard a little bit. So there's some juxtaposition there, but the whole thing is the government wants Tony's suits because they believe it's a matter of basically them just wanting them. And so they claim that, you know, the world has, you know, is trying to replicate the suits and blah, 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 blah. And they show video footage of this. So they had like Iran. And
well, Tony hijacks.
Hold on. I'm getting to that.
To show the videos.
So first they show the videos and then Tony hijacks them to prove how incompetent these suits are. And he goes, China, Iran, or whatever countries he mentioned, 10 years. Hammer. 20 years, because what he shows is Hammer Industries trying to build a suit and they're completely incompetent at it to the point where a guy almost dies.
Yeah, and right before the videos, that's when Rhodey came out and he was reading a segmented part out of context, a part of his report that was to be read at the Senate committee. Because the senator, played by Gary Shandling, who would return later on in the series, wanted to pretty much stick it to Tony.
And when we get to Captain America Winter Soldier, this makes a lot of sense. Not to get too ahead of ourselves. But so Tony is... He seems to have won, but it's not really clear what he won because it's just not working. And there is one scene we forgot to mention here. Is that at the end of the Stark Expo, Tony is seen, after his presentation, he is seen checking his vitals on what looks to be kind of like a high-tech machine of sorts that's checking his blood levels for palladium, and he's being poisoned. And so this kind of explains a lot of his attitude throughout the movie for obvious reasons. He thinks he's dying. And so later on, we see that Tony doesn't care about being, you know, the head of Stark Industries or anything like that. He just wants to be Iron Man, but he's also dying. So he's like looking at his legacy. And it's really funny watching him and Pepper interact in that scene where she's in the workshop. And right before he pitches she take over Stark Industries, there's that scene with the paintings, and they use like a fan art of Iron Man, or I guess maybe fan art's not the right word, but they did the same thing that they did with like Obama and the portrait thing. But I don't know what it's called exactly. But
it's the Hope portrait.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And so it looks pretty cool. And, you know, he takes this fancy schmancy piece of modern art, which is just like a strip on a painting. It's just a strip. And she's like, you know, you're going to destroy any, I think Tony like donated his entire like art collection to like the Boy Scouts of America or something, which is just such a very Tony thing to do. And Pepper has a cold and she's just like not.
So I just want to throw this out there. I was in the Boy Scouts for a very brief moment of time. I think I literally had a cup of coffee, then left. I don't remember having any art galleries donated to the Boy Scouts in my time.
Clearly you were just there at the wrong time.
Apparently.
So Tony doesn't care about the government. He doesn't care about like anything anymore. And he doesn't care about corporations and corporate nonsense. So he decides that he's just going to make Pepper CEO of Stark Industries. And Pepper's like, wait, seriously? And I think this echoes a lot from the first Iron Man, where he's still kind of struggling with who he is, but he's also like, she's the only person in his life that he trusts that he has in his life. And she's the only person that he can trust to have Stark Industries' best interest. And so Pepper's like, all right then. And then we flash forward after this, you know, they celebrate. And we see a little bit more of Vanko in the snow in Russia. And he's coming to some, like, Grand Prix event in Monaco. And meanwhile, Tony's learning boxing. And he's introduced to Natalie Rushman from Legal, played by Scarlett Johansson, debuting as Black Widow. Although, funny enough, originally, get this, Emily Blunt was supposed to play Black Widow. But she couldn't commit because she was committed to Gulliver's Travels. Does anyone remember that movie?
What movie?
Exactly. So, Emily, I don't know if you were like, you already signed a contract for Gulliver's Travels, but this is missed opportunity.
I think most times it is because they've already signed the contracts in that regard.
Oh, this is so sad. Like, come on. There's no way a movie named that was going to adapt Gulliver's Travels was going to be good. I'm sorry.
But honestly, it probably worked out for the better.
Yes, it did. Yeah. I don't think Emily would have been the right choice. Not that she's not a great actress, but I don't think that like, but anyway, so Scarlett Johansson actually dyed her hair red before she even got the role because she wanted it so badly. And then they showed her the suit she had to wear and she was like, am I going to be able to move in this? Because it was very, very tight. But very like classic comic book S.H.I.E.L.D. costume. But we'll get to that. So Natalie Rushman is from Legal, even though like she shows up, like they mention that she's from Legal, but she kind of becomes Pepper's or assistant or something. Her position was not really made clear, but I think that's part of the vagueness of it, that like to imply that she's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent or something, because she's just kind of there. And so Tony has to step out to sign the final paperwork and give his like fingerprint to prove that he's turning the company over. Meanwhile, Natalie gets in the ring with Happy. And Tony's of course smitten because Natasha's hot and whatnot. And you know, there's some sexist comments by Happy, and he gets his butt kicked. Not literally, because she just, like, does that cold hip move thing.
He got wrecked.
Yeah, so.
He got wrecked so hard that if he did have kids, they'd be feeling it too.
It's just really amusing. And meanwhile, Tony's like voyeuring Natalie, and she's like a model, and she speaks Latin. And so like whoever does the fake, like, you know, undercover bios for S.H.I.E.L.D. has probably a lot of fun with their job. So then we move to Monaco, where we see Natalie, and there's like this weird Grand Prix race thing where Tony has a car, and we see Elon Musk.
Who proposes a jet presentation at Stark Expo.
Yup. And there was something else. I think one of the buildings used for the Stark Expo is actually belongs to Elon Musk or his company or something.
Yeah. And then not only that, but they also brought back Christine Everhart from the first movie.
Yes, everybody's least favorite reporter.
Which is only the last time she comes back.
Actually, it's not.
It's not.
There is one short or video, I think, that was a tie-in to, I want to say, Civil War or something that she shows up in.
Oh, but
there was some weird clip that she showed up in as a news anchor for CNN or whoever it was.
Gotcha. But yeah, but she was doing a spread on Hammer.
Hammer is just like, so, this is such a senpai notice me moment. Like,
notice me, senpai.
And the question, like, he wants Christine's attention and he wants Tony's attention. And Tony's like, I'm done. I want to drive my own race car because I can.
Yeah. Which is, I like how he does kind of like a fourth wall break in a way where he looks into the mirror and goes, what would you do? Because it's like he's checking his vitals in the bathroom and he's like, and he kind of just looks in the mirror and he kind of almost does. I don't think it's like an official fourth wall break because it's more like him asking.
It's not official.
But it's him asking himself in the mirror, but the way it looks with the camera shot, it's literally like he's staring into the camera going, well, what do you think I should do?
Yeah, I think that's fair. So Tony ends up driving the race car and Vanko shows up and there's a cool, I like the fact that they had like this slim version of the suit where he just like pulls it out of the suitcase and he puts it on and he's able to fight off Vanko, but.
Well, I think that's just their way of introducing the multiple ways that Tony can get suited up. Because originally in the first one, he had to go for the full setup. This one, you have the briefcase.
And then in Iron Man, you will have the laser.
In Avengers.
I said Avengers.
No, you said in Iron Man.
Oh.
So in Avengers, yeah. But he has like three different ways of having how the suit gets put on. The wristbands being one of them. And then you also have... then Iron Man 3, he has a couple different ways of doing it. And then in all the other movies, and then he starts pressing like in Infinity War, he presses his chest piece.
Yep.
And then voila. So it's like an introduction to how Tony can eventually get multiple ways of putting on his outfit.
Yes. So anyway, there's a fight and the Monaco authorities, because they speak French, have let Tony briefly speak to Vanko, and Vanko basically like says something along the lines of like, oh, your dad screwed over my dad, so I'm gonna make the world hate you or whatnot. Very like crazy supervillain-esque.
Yeah, but Tony gives Vanko some advice on what he built.
Doubling your rotation or something techie sounding.
But then at the same time, Vanko, as the very last thing that he says to Tony is like, palladium to the chest, one hell of a way to die, isn't it?
Which, like, how does he know that?
Which then we find out a little later.
Do we actually know how he finds out?
Yeah, because later on in the film, Fury tells Tony who Vanko is, or who Anton was, and how he worked for Howard and stuff like that, and then...
Oh, then that implies that his dad also died from palladium poisoning.
No, but the thing is that the blueprints, if you're paying attention, because you said it, is that at the beginning of the movie, you see the blueprints, The blueprints that he's also looking at is that of the arc reactor.
Because
Anton and Howard worked on the arc reactor together.
Right.
Nick Fury tells us a little later in the film.
And you know, you have Paul Bettany returning as the voice of Jarvis, saying something like, you know, unfortunately, sir, the thing that is keeping you alive is also killing you. So, end of the movie, Mickey Rourke's character's in prison, Tony's back dealing with, you know, his death. I mean, there's really nothing else to say. No, just kidding.
End of the movie, everyone dies there.
So Tony doesn't want to tell Pepper that he's dying. Pepper wants to go back to, they have to go back to DC and deal with politicians. And Tony's like, I don't want to. I also don't want to go and deal with my birthday. Let's cancel my birthday. And Pepper's just like, are you just being a spoiled brat? And the answer is not really, but anyway. So Vanko is broken out of prison with a mashed potato bomb. And it is Justin Hammer. And what I really like that they did is throughout the movie, in most of the scenes that Hammer is in, he always has some kind of candy in him, like the lollipop or the ice cream or gelato he had flown from Italy or something, organic ice cream. Jeez Louise.
San Francisco.
Yes.
The ice cream is Italian, but it's flown in from San Francisco.
Yes.
I watched the movie before we recorded.
They're sitting in like this, you know, airline bay, and Justin Hammer really likes this guy because he can make Tony, what's the word I'm looking for? He makes like, what was it? Make Tony Stark look like something else. I don't remember exactly what it was.
He wants to destroy Tony Stark's legacy.
Legacy. There it is.
Yeah.
And Hammer's really into anyone who will help him do that. And so they make a deal that they'll work together. And there was something about a bird that was never explained, but basically that there was a bird and he really likes this bird and he wants the bird. And the bird is related to absolutely nothing, but it has to do with like this really long and convoluted story and view that Mickey Rourke had on the character, which like kudos to you. But we saw none of that, and there's a reason that we will get to at the end of the summary. So, Tony's birthday party. Tony, yeah, Rhodey shows up, and there's a brief scene with him about the suits and everything, and like, you don't want the government to come and just take these suits, Tony.
But then that's also when Rhodey sees the cartridges coming out of the chess piece.
Yep, and he's like, oh my god, what's going on? And he goes, palladium poisoning, and then he has to get ready for the birthday party, and he is getting ready, and Natalie shows up to, like, help him put on makeup and pick out a watch, and he's like, you know, if hypothetically this was, like, the last birthday party you were ever going to have, how would you just spend it? She goes, well, I'd spend it however I want with whoever I want to, and apparently that means having her getting drunk and wasted and not caring about life, which is pretty much what Tony does, and it's kind of funny. But it gets out of control really fast because Tony's drunk, everybody's drunk, and there's just like some really amazing like nods to the comic book Tony in this. And the soundtrack is again amazing for this movie because like Another One Bites the Dust is playing in the background. It's really cool. And basically,
you do know that the official soundtrack for Iron Man 2 is all AC/DC. Like if you go out in stores, the official soundtrack is AC/DC.
I heard Another One. I know it's all.
No. Another One Bites the Dust is part of the score of the film.
Yeah.
But the soundtrack does not have that because it's all AC/DC. AC/DC apparently put out a whole new album, which was mostly greatest hits, because that's what was used for Iron Man 2.
Yep. And I think they actually got permission to have Iron Man on the album cover of their album. So basically Rhodey puts on the suit and him and Tony fight and they destroy this beautiful, beautiful house that really did not deserve it.
You realize that anything that Tony owns building or housewise gets destroyed in every movie.
In
the first Iron Man, he inadvertently wrecks the house because he was doing his flight simulations. And Iron Man 2 was the fight between him and Rhodey. Iron Man 3, the Mandarin, destroys his house, literally.
The not Mandarin.
for the sake of this conversation, because we haven't seen Iron Man 3 yet.
And not stupid. Mandarin.
The Mandarin destroys this house. In Avengers, Stark Tower gets wrecked. And then in Avengers Ultron, Stark Tower, which is now Avengers Tower, gets wrecked. And then in Endgame,
the compound.
The Avengers compound gets wrecked. So Tony owning land or buildings of any sort that's massive doesn't go well for him.
Yeah, I guess not.
But that nice little cot that he has out in the woods, that is nice and safe.
This is true. Anyway, so Pepper thinks Tony's out of control, which he is, and everybody's mad at Tony. And Pepper is also mad at Natalie. And she's just not a fan of Natalie. I don't know what it is. Maybe because Tony's flirting with her. Maybe because she's like really sexy and short or something. I don't know. But Pepper's just not digging her.
But excuse me, sir. Can you please step out of the donut?
We're getting to that. We haven't gotten there yet.
So I wanted to say it so badly.
Tony, his house gets destroyed, and Rhodey takes the suit, which is like the old suit, the like gray, this is like the Mach 2 suit.
Actually, I believe that was the suit that they showed Terrence Howard's Rhodey looking at.
Yes, it was.
So that was like the second suit that was made on purpose for Rhodey.
Anything is possible. So Rhodey takes the suit and flies away, and Tony ends up in a donut. And then you have, of course, Nick Fury showing up with a line. You can say it again.
Excuse me, sir. Can you please step out of the donut? That is such a great line.
Donut. It is the best line. And this is where it is revealed, while Tony is super hungover, that S.H.I.E.L.D. has been keeping an eye on him, and they're kind of cranky about his whole Iron Man shtick. And throughout this, they take some vitals to see if they, you know, if S.H.I.E.L.D. scientists can possibly do something about him dying. And Natalie is revealed to actually be working for Nick Fury instead of for Stark Industries. And she's like pretty good at her job. I think this is like by far my favorite like representation of Black Widow. Because I think it was the most, like, comic book-esque. Just to me, she felt more like Black Widow in this one movie than I think she has in the entire MCU. But we'll see how her solo movie reflects that.
So, which, by the way, apparently that's taking place between Civil War and Endgame? Or Infinity War?
I thought it was
just
taking place between Infinity War and Endgame.
No, it's taking place between Civil War and Endgame. So there's possibilities of, like, there's been talks that Tony's coming back briefly.
I did hear the rumors. I think somebody said it was a deleted scene that, like, wasn't included in, I think, Iron Man 2 or something.
Well, there's also the talk that they're going to do Ironheart because Robert Downey Jr. has been a big proponent for that being made. And per the comics, Tony is the one that is essentially in the place of Jarvis as the automated voice, and that's what Tony would be if they go with that. So
I have issues with all of that for several reasons, because granted, like, Riri out of like legacy heroes, because I know they're also introducing Kamala Khan, Riri actually makes sense because Tony's been an established hero, people have seen him, he's inspired an entire generation of children. Captain Marvel hasn't done jack. The only person she could have potentially inspired is Monica Rambeau, and that's a really awkward separate conversation. Ooh.
We'll get there.
So, palladium poisoning, life sucks for Tony, and I like the line, we're going to help you solve the riddle of your heart, something like that. Meanwhile, Vanko is at Hammertech. And he's decided that they're not going to be suits, they're going to be drones. And he just, like, hacks into, like, Hammer's system without a second thought. I'm like, dude, Hammertech. Apparently Hammertech's firewalls are also arable.
And he got the government contract how?
It's the government. Do you really have to ask? He probably bribed someone. probably that same senator. Either way, Tony is, they're back at, so I guess Fury takes Tony back to his house, what's left of it, while Rhodey gets the orders to start arming the new suit that he took from Tony. And so Fury fills in a lot of the details about Vanko and Howard, and I wish we could get a flashback of some sort somewhere of how Howard and Fury meet. Like, that would be epic. That would be awesome. I would really like to see that. But so then basically Tony is tasked with, what was it that S.H.I.E.L.D. wanted him to do exactly? Solve the Vanko issue or like?
Well, no, they wanted him to solve the issue of his heart.
Oh, yeah. And so,
because they pretty much gave him Howard's crate, and he goes through Howard's crate. Right. And he's like watching like the old videos of like Howard doing like the introductions and stuff like that for
the Stark Expo,
which he's really just more, which he's really just more making an ass of himself.
I mean, Howard was an ass in a lot of ways.
And so. but then it gets to the very end of the film.
Hold on, though. There's one person you forgot to mention before we get to that.
Coulson's back.
And Coulson, I love Coulson's line, how he's just basically going to taser Tony and watch Super Nanny.
While he drools.
Yes.
While Tony
drools. And it's funny watching, like, Fury and Coulson interacting with Tony. And this is our first hint about the greater MCU, which is Fury saying, I have bigger problems in the Southwest region.
Which eventually Coulson, as we see, leaves for.
Yep. So Tony is dealing
watching with the videos.
His daddy issues.
But he's watching the videos, but at the very end of the one video, it's actually Howard giving a message to Tony directly to Tony. Because he's like, you're not going to understand this now while you're a kid, but you should be able to understand this now that you've been given to this as an adult. And it's like, and it starts, you know, and some things start clicking in his head, which then prompts him to go see Pepper, which doesn't go over well. But then he notices
strawberries, and she's allergic to strawberries.
Yeah, but then he sees something in regards to collecting his possessions that were in the office, one of which being the Stark Expo.
The original Stark Expo. Yep.
Yep. And so he takes it home.
Yep.
And he has Jarvis upload the entire thing. They remove trees, all this other nonsense.
And, you know, to make a long story short, figuring out that his dad, like, invented a new element but couldn't replicate it. And there's a lot of, we can talk a little bit more about this when we get to Captain America, but, like, you see a lot of Howard's frustrations about the limitations of the technology of his time. And it's really interesting how that's shown. But so Tony starts working, and in the scope of this, you see these like giant colliders, and Coulson walks in and he grabs something and it looks like a prototype for a Captain America shield. And Tony's like, that's it. That's exactly what I needed.
Yeah. But the line that Coulson said was like, how did this get here?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Tony goes, that's it. That's perfect. Cause he's able to, he uses it to level.
And in terms of, like, how it got there, it's entirely possible that it was probably in, you know, amongst Howard's possessions.
That would be the safest bet.
Well, because we know Howard, like, spent a long time looking for Steve after the events of Captain America, so anything is possible. Anyway, so Coulson tells him that, you know, he's done with babysitting duty. He's got some thing he has to deal with at the border, I don't know. I don't remember exactly where it takes place, but it's some very
New Mexico.
New Mexico.
Yep.
Would have been funny if it was Roswell. But anyway.
Well, keep in mind, what's supposed to happen this Friday? The Area 51 raid.
Oh God. That'll happen. I think somebody already, there's like two Australians or something that tried and got arrested already.
I know DerpyCon is doing their own form of Area 51 raid news coverage. They're not going to raid, but they're just going to cover it like a news station would.
That is hilarious, and I appreciate that greatly. Anyway, so meanwhile, all of this is happening. Rhodey is having a upgrade to the Iron Man suit by Justin Hammer.
Upgrade.
Seriously.
Tell me about that ex-wife, all right?
Oh, yeah. And so it's actually really fun. I love like, you know, those montages where they just keep pulling out all of, like, the guns and ammunitions out of everything. But he walks in with, like, a lollipop. And it's, like, it's so childish. But, like, it's just funny. And he goes, okay, we'll take it. He goes, what? What do you want? He goes, we'll take it all.
Well, let's throw this out there. If anyone acting-wise can pull that type of stuff off, it is Sam Rockwell.
This is true. He does a perfect job with an awful character.
Well, also, remember him in Lost in Galaxy Quest?
Oh, Galaxy Quest. Be still my heart for Galaxy Quest.
I smell a future episode.
Let's do it.
I completely forgot Justin Long was in that movie, too.
There's a lot of people in that movie.
Sigourney Weaver wanted to be a blonde on purpose for that movie. We digress.
We can't help it. So the suit is being upgraded. Tony's building the new element. And afterwards, Hammer wants to, like, impress his, like, military buddies and his, like, you know, by presenting at the Stark Expo. Because I think at one meeting with Tony, he said something about, like, I'd like to present at your expo. And Tony's like, yeah, come up with something good. We'll put it on the books. And so he calls Vanko. And Vanko's like, drones won't shoot. They make presentation, not demonstration. Apparently, Hammer is so intelligent, he does not even know what the difference between a demonstration and presentation is. And he's very angry at this point. But so everything kind of comes to a head. Vanko calls Tony. He knows that, you know, Hammer is presenting at the Stark Expo. And I think in that scene, Mickey Rourke says something about the Expo. And so the drones are presented at the Stark Expo. Tony shows up, and it's this, like, moment.
Well, no. First, Rhodey pops up out of the stage.
Oh, which, yes. Rhodey
is Pepper is shocked by. And then after Rhodey is there, like, doing the salute and stuff like that, that's when Tony comes in and, like, waves to the crowd, you know, let's play nice. And he goes, he's working with Vanko. And Rhodey's yep. like, what? And now you can take it away.
So Vanko activates all of the robot suits, and they start going after Tony and going after civilians, and they're going crazy.
And he took over Rhodey's suit, too.
Getting to that, yes, and he took over Rhodey's suit, so, which is interesting because, like, he could still communicate with Tony, but he couldn't, like, control the suit, so it made for some very interesting moments. So they have to break into, so they're trying to figure out what's going on, and they're back, Pepper and goes backstage, and and she's trying to, like, figure out how to stop the drones, and Natalie is there, and she just, like, does what Natasha Romanoff does best. She just, like, slams Hammer down, like, what did you do? What? Tell me everything. So epic. So she and Happy go to Hammer. They go to Catch. Hammer. They go Hammer to Hammer. Tech. And she changes into her cat suit.
Which, by the way, I'm not sure if anyone noticed this. I mean, unless it was just one of those things where it was like it just moved too fast. But I swear that if you look on the one arm where you have, like, you think it's the SHIELD logo, that it kind of looks a little bit like the Hydra logo.
Because
as we'll find out in Winter Soldier, you know.
Nope, it's the SHIELD logo.
It's the SHIELD logo? I don't know, like, when you watch it...
I'm literally looking at the footage right now. It is the SHIELD logo. Sorry.
Okay. No, like I'm saying, like, I kind of glanced at it real quick, you know, before we recorded, and I like looked at it and was like, that looked weird, but I'm like, okay.
Yep. That's fair though. I mean, you know, early hints, but that scene is filmed so well.
Oh, the fight scene?
That entire sequence of her in the hallway, and Happy's like, she's like, keep the car warm, and Happy's like, okay, I'll do that, and he rushes in after, like, before her, and, you know, he's, like, fighting this one dude, and she just, like, takes out all the bad guys, and it's like...
I like how she, when she's like, gets to the last guy, all she just does is take the pepper spray, spray him in the eyes, and then just walks away.
You know, she's a little... So she just, like, takes out all these guys, and it's so cool, and I love this suit so much. It's just, it's so, I said this before, but it's just, like, so comic book-esque. I love it.
That's actually, you know how, like, 7-Eleven used to do the Slurpee cups and the big gulp cups for, like, the movies and stuff like that? That's the only cup from Iron Man 2 that I still have.
Huh.
The Scarlett Johansson Black Widow one.
Good to know. So she manages to, I guess she has some rudimentary computer skills, but she helps Tony to bring Rhodey back to normal. And they go to this like bonsai Japanese-esque looking area.
They went to like a greenhouse type thing.
Well, I think that was also part of the Stark Expo.
I think all of it was part of the Stark Expo.
Yeah. So there's an epic fight. But before that, you know, they're talking about, like, which one of them is the bigger gun. And they, which was really funny because it's, like, clearly Tony, his suit. And then Vanko shows up and he goes, I'm going to hit this guy with the X-Wife, which is, like, this, like,
really it's like a, it's like the size of a cigar.
Yeah, it's a pretty big bullet. And he goes, I'm going to hit the sucker with the X-Wife. And he hits the, and it just, like,
so, it like, just, it literally farts out.
It fizzles out. It's the funniest thing. And Tony just kind of looks at him and goes, hammer tech?
Rhodey's like, yeah. But that, it's so great. It's like, yeah. It's like this huge buildup to shoot the ex-wife. And it just hits him. You hear a little fart sound. Mm-hmm. And then it just fizzles out.
And in a little piece of foreshadowing where the two, like, energies from the two Iron Man suits meet, that is how they use to destroy Vanko, essentially, and stop him, and which stopping him, then they stop the drones, and then Tony rescues Pepper, of course, and there's a scene on the rooftop where she's like, I literally cannot handle this stress, and when Natasha was working with Tony to bring Rhodey back, there's this whole thing about, like, you were dying, and Tony kind of has to come clean, and so she's like, I cannot handle this. You're dying. You're not dying. And then they kiss. And it's like this very sweet moment, except it's kind of slightly ruined by the fact that, like, Rhodey's just there because you guys make me sick.
It is like, you look like two seals trying to eat each other.
Right. And Tony's like, and Rhodey tells him, I'm going to hold on to this. And it's like, not going to happen. He goes, I'm just going to do it. And he just flies away.
My car was destroyed in all this action. That was his line. His line was, my car got destroyed. I'm going to borrow the suit to go home.
So, you know, Tony and Pepper kiss. It's all happy. Everything is good in life. They get medals. And Tony, you know, and the guy giving them the medals is...
Gary Shandling's character.
Is the Senator Stern.
Yep.
And he's, like, putting the medal on, and he just, like, sticks him, and he gets him with, like, the needle point. He goes... And Tony kind of winces, goes, amazing how in a time, how, what was, it was something like, amazing how annoying a tiny little prick can be.
Yeah, that was
and
the
Tony
line.
Just kind of looks at him like, you're clearly talking about yourself, dude. But in between those two scenes, the kiss with Pepper and the medal ceremony, there's a scene with Nick Fury where, you know, which harkens back to the first Iron Man, where about the Avengers Initiative. Where Natasha was apparently sent in undercover to assess the concept of using Tony as an Avenger. And it says, Iron Man, yes, Tony Stark need not accept, or need not offered, or something like that, like, not needed. So Tony's gonna, like, Iron Man is a great asset, but Tony is, like, volatile and, you know, has a death wish. And Tony's like, in my defense, I was dying. And this new element that he created obviously saves his life, blah, 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 blah. Everything is happy. And that's pretty much the end of the movie until the after credit scene, which shows Agent Coulson arriving to New Mexico, and he's like on the phone with Fury telling him like we found it or something, and the scene pans back and you see Thor's hammer.
Mjolnir!
And it was such a cool epic scene. And my brother and I remember this in the theater, my brother and I jumped up and my mom's like, why is there a hammer in scale? They're like, it's Thor! It's Thor!
Now, there was another cameo along with Elon Musk that took place in the film, but it took place in the very beginning when they put Tony in first person mode and they're going through. Mm-hmm. The other person, and if you've noticed while watching the film, because his company's logo was almost everywhere, was the CEO of Oracle. And if you noticed on a few of the venues in Stark Expo, it had Oracle on it.
Yes, it did. You're right.
If you go to any hotel or restaurant, odds are the PMS or POS system that they're using is an Oracle system. Oracle specializes in point of sales and property management systems.
That is actually really cool.
I would know this because I've been working in the credit card industry for like, you know, the last 2 years. And yeah. So I just wanted to throw that out there that a lot of people didn't know that because Tony says, hey, it's the Oracle man. That was the CEO of Oracle.
Oh, interesting. I did not catch that.
Yeah, I never knew it the first few times, but then when I obviously started working in the job that I was, well, not anymore because I got laid off, which is affording me to do more podcast recordings. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Because now October 15th, we're not recording now.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Because I'm actually going to go see Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. When we're supposed to be recording, I'm actually getting to see the movie at a special screening. But yeah, so it's like, I remember like, I think a few months ago, I actually noticed that and I started paying it more, a little bit more attention. I was like, oh crap, that really is the dude from Oracle.
That is really cool. So this is like, in terms of, you know, this does a lot to establish kind of the greater MCU. It continues the threat from Iron Man 1, relating to the Avengers initiative, but there's a lot that gets lost. And a lot of it, I think, is like the backstory between Vanko, development of Hammer, and like the overall plot.
I don't think there was supposed to be any development of the Hammer character outside of
I
that.
I think there should have been just a little bit, but I understand why there wasn't. The key thing
that this movie was supposed to do was essentially begin the start of Rhodey as War Machine or as Iron Patriot. It was the first time we got to see him in the suit.
No, I know the War Machine thing. I rolled my eyes and groaned at the use of the words Iron Patriot.
Well, we'll get to roll our eyes like 16 more times when we do that film. It was the true introduction of Rhodey in the suit, which would lead on, which also interesting fact, out of all the people that got introduced going into Avengers, Rhodey is the only one who does not get used.
This is true.
He's not even in Avengers.
No, he's not. And there's really no explanation given why he's not in it.
Because Tony, Banner, albeit recasted Banner, Thor, Steve Rogers, Black Widow, and Hawkeye are all introduced before Avengers, and they're in Avengers. War Machine is the only one that is introduced before Avengers that is not in it.
True. Very true.
Anyway, and this was also the true introduction of Black Widow.
It is indeed. So there's a couple of things that are going on here. And I think part of the reason that like War Machine basically gets kind of fallen back on and is underused, even in Iron Man 3, is I think Jon Favreau had an idea for the character and a plan that he was going to use. But according to his own words, he felt very limited by Marvel's interference that wanted the movie to establish and tie in more of the future MCU. And I think that...
Which is also explain why he didn't direct Iron Man 3.
Which is exactly why he didn't direct Iron Man 3, exactly. Which also explains why Iron Man 3 is so different and choppy. But we'll get to that. Yeah. I don't want to delve too much into it. There's also an interesting thing that I noticed, or that was pointed out, that Shauna Peck, I think, was one of the co-writers of the script, and she kind of compared Tony in this movie to, like, Oppenheimer, and this concept of, like, you know, I have become death, destroyer of worlds, and it's, like, a little bit how Tony feels, and the fact that he's, like, distanced, because a lot of the problems, while that have been facilitated through Stark Industries and all directly his fault, are also not his fault. And we see this come to a head a little bit more, I think, in Ultron than we do in this film. But this hurts me. They made two identical Rolls-Royce Phantoms for this movie, and they also destroyed both of them in this movie. That is a crime.
It's a car.
It's a Rolls-Royce Phantom.
It's a car.
It's a Phantom! Oh my god.
You're talking to a guy who drives a Subaru Outback. Do you really think I care about those fancy
cars? I don't have a car. That doesn't mean I can't appreciate a beautiful Rolls Royce.
I'm going to say this right now, and I know the person's never going to listen to this podcast, so I can get away with saying this, but I see my one friend constantly posting about her, like, Dodge Charger.
Ew.
And it's like, oh, it's my baby, and I wash my car, and it's like, it's an overpriced sports car. It's not even that. It's an
overpriced hunk of junk. It's not even a good sports car. There, I said it.
It's not even a good car.
No, it's not. Like, you want a good, like, obnoxious sports car? At least get a Mustang, okay? Like, come on.
Yeah, like, I have a Subaru Outback. I'm extremely happy with my Subaru Outback. And my Subaru Outback can outperform your Charger any day. My Subaru Outback could probably outperform that Rolls Royce any day, too. So I really don't care, and I'm not a car.
Back to Iron Man 2.
No, damn it, we're gonna rant about cars.
I mean, I'm perfectly happy to do like an entire episode looking at like classic cars for movies, but that's separate. But this movie does a lot of things I think really well, in that it does establish the greater MCU. It establishes and actually, I think, decently fleshes out Natasha's character without it seeming too like the movie's about her. And the best part is like, it's left mysterious. We don't really know who Natasha is because we were looking at Natalia or Natalie, whatever, throughout the entire movie. So we don't know who Black Widow is. We just know that like this girl from Legal turned out to be a super spy that works for Fury.
And we don't hear from her again. Well, we see her at the very end of Captain America.
Because no,
she's,
we don't.
Yeah, we do. She's the one that walks into Steve's room after he's taken out the ice.
That is not Black Widow. That is not Natasha Romanoff. The one who walks into the uniform?
Yeah, that's her.
That was not her.
That is her.
That was not her.
There it is. That is, like, as we both go to IMDb, like, at the same time.
I am telling you, that nurse was not in the...
It wasn't a nurse.
Well, whoever the fake nurse was, that was Amanda Rigetti. That was not Natasha Romanoff. Fight me!
Hold on, give me a second. I just got an IMDb and my thing wanted to be slow.
I'm right. I'm awesome. Come fight me.
Oh, Jenna Coleman's in this movie. Interesting.
Yeah, Jenna Coleman plays one of the two girls that Bucky and Steve sort of take out on a date.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I forgot J.G. Field was in here. Oh, the Howling Commandos really needed more love.
Because she would be uncredited.
Nope. She would be credited because it's Amanda Rigetti. Oh. As S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
No, because the thing is that a lot of...
She is not in that scene in Steve's hospital room.
And it wasn't a hospital room. It
was whatever, just... the fake room that he wakes up in. That was not Scarlett Johansson. That was Amanda Rigetti.
Damn it. Piss off. You know. But
the words you're looking for, by the way, are, gosh, Sasha, you were right.
Piss off, Sasha. You know, but then if that's the case, then we don't see Scarlet. We don't see her until Avengers.
Exactly.
When she's being interrogated, when really she's suckering those guys.
She's the one. She's the one in the middle of an interrogation. That moron was giving her everything.
Yep.
But I think there was a lot going for this movie. I don't think it's as bad as a lot of people made it out to be when it came out. I think it feels a little bit more like an MCU movie than a classic comic book movie like Iron Man 1 felt. Because Iron Man 1, we talked about this, felt very much like a more classic comic book adaptation.
Well, not only that, but Favreau brought in comic book writers to help flesh out the script and work with the actors and stuff like that.
Yeah, I wish that we could have seen, I wish going further into the MCU, we get a little bit more of that. Genuinely, because I think that there's some good to be said to that. And I think that also happened a little bit in Winter Soldier, because at the very least, a certain someone had a very derpy but existable cameo in the movie. I'm, of course, talking about Ed Brubaker, who wrote... I'm staring at my copy of Captain America, The Winter Soldier right now. Not the movie, the comic.
Why do you put it on camera? Oh, wait, that's right.
One day we will see about doing an actual like video, not when I'm wearing a pajama shirt.
It's okay. I literally threw on a shirt because I know we're on video so we could see each other. And I know you didn't want to see my Jewish hairy chest or anything like that.
You can keep it to yourself. I enjoyed the movie. I don't think it deserves the flack that it got. It was pretty successful. It was, I think, top five movie of the summer when it came out.
And of course, this came out in 2010, which was 2 years after Incredible Hulk and Iron Man first came out.
But in terms of chronological order, this pretty much takes place almost directly after I think it's like a few months in between Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2.
I think it is. Yeah.
And there is, of course, this cute images of Tony flying past this little kid who is wearing an Iron Man helmet and like holding up the thing, and it's super cute.
Yeah, and he hits the droid and he goes, "Good job, kid."
Yep, and that kid is, of course, Peter Parker, who we will never see or hear from again in the MCU. Thank you, Sony, for being a jack.
Well, actually, not necessarily. Did you hear the news that came out over the weekend?
What happened now?
Sony offered a new deal towards Disney.
I thought Disney said, screw you, we don't need Spider-Man.
No, they didn't say that. They said, that's an interesting offer, let's talk.
Oh, okay. Well, by the time the...
Because apparently what the deal was is that it was kind of like a lot of the same stuff that Disney was going to offer, like the TV stuff and, you know, the help with the production costs and stuff like that. But the difference was that Sony was willing to give 30% gross to Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Honestly, I think the... whatever they negotiate, it will do whatever it does. It pushes Spider-Man into either the end of Phase 5 or into Phase 6. One way or the other, it should be late Phase 5, early Phase 6 for him, anyways.
Yeah, well, we shall see.
We don't even know what's in Phase 5 yet, outside of Blade.
I mean, they might always shoehorn it in, which is entirely possible, into like the end of Phase 4, beginning of Phase 5. But we'll see. There is so much MCU to get through. We don't really have time to dwell too much about it, especially because next week, of course, we will be talking about Thor and kind of the League and Legend of Thor, and no, I will not spend the first half an hour delving into Norse mythology. I'll do rich Norse mythology. I don't care.
But at least, you're not going to be like that woman that was at the Broadway play of Tom Hiddleston's and pleasure thyself to the image and voice of Tom Hiddleston live on stage. Yes, that really happened. I was reading about that before we recorded.
Y'all should be thankful you cannot see my face right now, because this is the face of someone that has just been traumatized. People need therapy.
I love the fact that everyone saw that article and it automatically tagged by one friend who's a massive Tim Hiddleston fan. And she's like, no, it wasn't me because my seats were over here.
Yeah, well, people, control yourselves, please. That's disgusting.
It's why we can't have nice things.
That is exactly it. So I know that because of all of this hoopla with Marvel over Iron Man 2 and wanting to introduce more into the MCU, blah, 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 Mickey Rourke was very upset that some of his, like, more, what he called were, like, fleshed out scenes about
Vanko.
About Vanko were cut. And, like, okay. I mean, for me, like, I didn't mind Vanko, but he wasn't interesting enough for me. I just kept, every time he showed up on screen, I just hoped he wouldn't start speaking Russian again.
But some other thoughts. So obviously, Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, they return. They introduced the character of Senator Stern, played by Gary Shandling. They did the recast of Rhodey from Terrence Howard to Don Cheadle.
John Slattery returned as Howard Stark.
Yep. And then also... Mickey Rourke, as mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, biggest reason he was casted for the role was because of his role in The Wrestler.
Yes.
Which was an independent film that got a lot of Oscar buzz. And it was actually the resurrection of Mickey Rourke's career for a while. Because, you know, he had The Wrestler, he had Iron Man 2, he had the Sin City sequel, A Dame to Kill. And he had a couple other big films, and then he kind of just fizzled out again. So.
Yep. And fun little story. The image that they show in the movie of Vanko, of young Vanko being arrested, is actually a real shot of when Mickey Rourke got arrested for drunk and disorderly or something like that. So fun note, in the same way that, like, they used a young picture of Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man 1, they did the same thing with Rourke's character, Vanko.
How interesting is it to know that Downey Jr., you know, had all of his issues going into Iron Man, and you actually had the exact same thing with Mickey Rourke going into Iron Man 2? It was like almost like renaissances for both guys just for Iron Man in a way.
I mean, I remember, like, looking back at it, there was a lot of controversy, and I think we talked a little bit about this during the Iron Man 1 podcast, but, like, there was a lot of controversy over casting Downey as Tony Stark. Part of it was because of his, you know, experience in prison and the fact that, like, he was still considered
a hazard,
an insurance risk. But part of it is also because they're like, oh, this guy hasn't done, like, serious roles. Like, he can't pull off Tony Stark. He's not suave enough. And
all. No, he's done plenty of serious roles before Iron Man.
I'm just telling you there was a lot of other dumb criticism about it. I don't remember exactly what it was. But, like, the more you think about it, about Downey and Tony Stark, the more you think, you realize, like, how perfect the casting was.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
So,
where can the people find you on the social medias?
You're not going to tell us the whole, you know, IMDb rating, how long the movie is.
I didn't log that this time.
What?
Because you're like, oh, I would have changed the format. I'm like, okay, I'm just not going to write anything down.
I didn't want to do the abridged version. I didn't say I didn't like the fun facts. Oh, forget it. I'm looking it up. Fine. If that's how you want to be, this is how we're going to do it then.
We're just like a bickering couple. It's so adorable.
Hilarious. So Iron Man 2 is 2 hours and 4 minutes long. It was released on April 26, 2010. It has a running time officially of 125 minutes. It had a budget of somewhere between $170 and $200 million. And that's a pretty big gap, but anyway, and it earned $623.9 million at the box office. And it currently has a rating of
7.0 out of 10.
There you go. 73% on Rotten Tomatoes. And so, speaking of finding me on the social medias, you can find me on Instagram as Geeky Captain, or on Tumblr as Geek Girl 101. The podcast will be up on Geek Girl 101 as well as THXT's website, as always.
Which is txthockey.com/nerdy-notions. You can find it also on the Twitter at the Lindenbaum 75, facebook.com/x75productions, Tumblr now at x75-productions, which I love the fact that the only thing that has actually got any likes outside of the one Nerdy Notions episode that we put up there, which was just you, really.
It was the announcement about the
about Robert Axelrod passing away.
Yep.
That is the only thing that has been touched. Like Power Dorks, where we're talking about the Power Ranger episodes, not a lick. Nerdy Notions, just you. but yeah, so obviously, and then yeah, txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions. Everything will be up on there. Sasha.
Yes.
Take us home.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. All three of you, two of you. There's probably one of you, but I'm feeling
none
optimistic.
Of you.
I'm feeling optimistic. But please thank you for listening if you've made it this far. As always, reach out to us with questions, comments, concerns, medieval torture methods, and we will catch you next time when we talk about Thor.